Recent research indicates that rising sea levels will make the effects of tsunamis worse, which might produce a, well, sure kind of response from you. It just makes sense. Higher water to begin with should produce more destructive events when earthquakes create tsunamis and send much more water ashore. But it's the degree of potential destruction that emerges as a notable point in that research, which involved people from Virginia Tech and other institutions around the world. We'll talk about the research and an area with particular concerns about higher sea levels in our region, and that would be Humboldt Bay. Robert Weiss is an associate professor of natural hazards in the Department of Geosciences at Virginia Tech. He was part of the team that put together the recent research. Dr. Weiss, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And then Alderon Laird joins us as well. He's an environmental consultant who studied the effects of sea level rise on the North Coast for years. Alderon, good to have you back on The Exchange.
Thank you.
So, Robert Weiss, let's start with you. This research team involved people from several universities. What did you set out to do?
We wanted to study what the effects of sea level rise is on the tsunami hazard. And we chose Macau because of the reclamation that they do there to increase their land sort of footprint. And we found some very interesting findings, I guess you could say. And they surprised us to a sense because of the extent of the flooding that sea level rise may cause in the future.
And when you say reclaimed land, so basically they've made land where there was just water before?
Yes, they reclaimed some land, some islands that they now put a lot of industrial and other developments on.
And what were some of the basic findings about the effects of the tsunami in relation to sea level rise?
So right now, Macau is relatively protected from tsunamis. That means that only very, very big tsunamis can cause flooding in Macau. But that changes dramatically if you add half a meter or a meter sea level rise, which could take place in 2050, 2060, so not too long in the future. But not only then smaller earthquakes and their tsunamis produce flooding, it's also the frequency increases because our smaller earthquakes are more frequent. We not only see more damage in one event, we also see more frequent flooding in a certain period of time, which is more concerning than actually the increase in flooding of the magnitude.
Alderon Laird, I imagine some of this sounds rather familiar to you with all the work you've done about looking at the shoreline of Humboldt Bay and how it has been changed over the years and how sea level rise appears to be changing it now.
Yes, it is very similar. We have about 7,000 acres that were reclaimed from the bay that are very vulnerable to being tidally inundated right now.
7,000 acres? Is it mostly farmland now?
It's mostly agricultural land, but in the intervening 100 years since they've been diked off, we've located most of our critical infrastructure on those lands, our natural gas lines, our sewer lines, municipal water lines, Highway 101. We've put a lot of things that are behind those dike structures that are holding back the tidewater right now. So the area regionally is very vulnerable. There's not much urban area on those dike lands, but again, the critical infrastructure for utilities and transportation.
I want to underscore this again. I know we've talked about it in the past, but it bears repeating that the situation with Humboldt Bay is not just the water getting higher, is it?
No, we're actually experiencing tectonic subsidence. We're at the tail end of the Cascadia subduction zone, and we have the highest rate of sea level rise that's been measured on the west coast of the United States. It's been about 1.5 feet, about a half a meter over the last century.
Okay, so then that gets us back to what Dr. Weiss was talking about, with the half a meter to a meter potentially coming to a rise in Macau. Is there any tectonic subsidence involved in Macau as well, or is it just the sea level rise there, Dr. Weiss?
No, it's just the sea level rise there. There might be other local components, such as subsidence by groundwater extraction or other ways, but other than that, it's just the sea level rise. They're not close to the subduction zone in Macau.
All right. Are there any, is Macau not prone to tsunamis now?
There are, but only from very big earthquakes. And I'm talking about 8.6, 8.7, 8.8. But that's a really rare earthquake for the Manila Trench, which is a subduction zone that produces those tsunamis and earthquakes.
All right, so help us figure out here if you have a feature that does produce earthquakes, but it would take a really big one to get into Macau. Then, I mean, and Macau is, I want to get clear on this. It is now part of China again. It was a Portuguese colony until 1999, wasn't it?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And located where then in relation to, say, Hong Kong?
That's a good question. I think it's further south in Hong Kong, but it's right opposite of the Manila Trench, like all the big cities along the South China Sea. And there are quite important centers for economy, for the global economy, essentially. And so being hit by a tsunami, even if it's a big tsunami, it really impacts us globally. And then at the moment, as I said, they only face a tsunami threat from very big earthquakes, but that changes as sea levels are rising. And in terms of the Humboldt Bay, it's not only that people are in harm's way, if critical infrastructure is in harm's way too, that it's equally important to consider this.
All right, so not yet, because people can get out of the way, but the fact is you lose a lot of infrastructure, you lose the ability for people to stay in those places, it sounds like.
Yes, exactly.
Alderaan, to pick that point up, if you would, because I know we've talked before about the extent of talking about how to repair, protect, do whatever with Highway 101, for example. I mean, how far along are the discussions about what to do?
They've been exploring the possibilities. The Caltrans did a pilot study that included the part of Humboldt Bay just to look at what would be the possible strategies and which ones would be maybe the most preferable. And I think elevating Highway 101 onto a causeway is probably the more preferable long-term strategy. Relocating Highway 101 in our landscape is not really very feasible. This would accommodate rising water elevations as they could go underneath the causeway. But it's a big issue. It's going to take a lot of money and a lot of funding, and we're not the only one on the coast of California that's going to be looking for funding to address sea level rise impacts.
Is the land subsidence issue less of a factor as you get south away from Humboldt Bay?
The studies that have been done by our local geologists has only been from Cape Mendocino north up to, say, Crescent City. So the area south of Cape Mendocino tectonically is different than the area around Humboldt Bay. So I'm only familiar with Humboldt Bay region. Mm-hmm.
You touched on it briefly. I was curious to know if there would be ways in which you would build a new 101 that would allow some movement of water underneath it. And it sounds like that is part of the planning at this point.
Yes, it is. I think building ultimately a causeway. I think in the interim or the short term, raising the elevation of the highway, you know, in 1 or 2 foot increments will probably be the strategy that would be employed. But I think the long term solution would be to elevate the highway where it's crossing the low lying dike former tidelands as causeway.
We're talking about sea level rise and tsunamis here on the Jefferson Exchange from a couple of perspectives. Alderaan Laird is an environmental consultant who has studied the sea level rise and the falling of the land at the same time around Humboldt Bay extensively. We also have with us Robert Weiss, an associate professor of natural hazards in the Department of Geosciences at Virginia Tech University, part of a team of scientists from around the world that took a look at some computer models indicating that sea level rise would in fact make tsunamis worse, and particularly they looked at Macau. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, talk about your concerns about sea level rise in conjunction with tsunamis, or ask some questions of our guest at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Dr. Weiss, if you can walk us through some of the computer modeling and how you tested the hypothesis and what kinds of results you got.
So the computer models is actually not just one model. There's a series of models because we have to characterize what kind of earthquakes can be generated in the Manila Trench. Unfortunately, the Manila Trench is not a trench that we know a lot about. So there's only what we would call a few years. It's actually decades worth of data. But because very large earthquakes are very rare, we believe that the largest earthquake has not yet occurred on the trench, and that gives us some uncertainty in terms of what is the biggest event that could produce the biggest tsunami in this area. However, looking at some other geophysical features, we are fairly comfortable with our assessment of what is possible. But to compute that, we need a model that translates the occurrence of an earthquake to a tsunami source. That's one model. And we talk about tens of thousands of earthquakes. And then we have to have a computer code that lets the tsunami propagate across the South China Sea and then inundate or not inundate or generally impact the coastal areas at the South China Sea, along the South China Sea. So this is a computationally very, very intense endeavor, which we couldn't have done, my guess is maybe 10 years ago, simply we wouldn't have had the computational power to do that, or the patience, rather, because you would have waited years to for the computations to conclude.
How long do they take now?
Just a few weeks, 2 months, but we're talking about constant computers, and it's a constant computation. And it's not a computers that you buy at Best Buy or some places like that. These are computers you don't want to be next to when they turn on to do calculations, because they're very loud and very noisy. They fill up a room, you know, in a sense. So it's real computational power that you need for doing this kind of research.
And Dr. Weiss, as you heard Alderaan Laird say, the concern is that the Cascadia earthquake could come sometime. It's been 318 years now since the last one, in a cycle that could be anywhere from 250 to 750, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Is there a sense or a belief based on science that that the Manila Trench is due, as Cascadia is, for a quake?
Yes, there is. There are less earthquakes. That means stress can build up, and that could lead to larger earthquakes. Seeing less earthquakes in a subduction zone makes us believe that under the conditions that we observe, that there might be building up the energy for a larger earthquake. But we really don't know until it happens, pretty much. That is sort of an unfortunate part of this research. We don't know until it happens that it could be possible, for sure, obviously.
And you talked about the computer models and the calculations that were going on to figure out, you know, if they were X size earthquake, how big a tsunami that might produce, that sort of thing, I assume. So were there some surprises then that arrived with the calculations, things that you had hypothesized that either were bigger or smaller or just somehow different from what you suspected?
Well, I've simulated a lot of tsunamis in my career. And so what is sort of, with these very urban environments, always very surprising to me is the fact that if you increase the earthquake magnitude and you increase the tsunami at the same time, then the impact on the coast is very different. Let's say would be different in the Humboldt Bay versus Macau, because it's so developed in Macau that if a tsunami is below a certain threshold, almost nothing happens. But if it's above a certain threshold, you have complete disaster. And so this, instead of having a slow increase in the tsunami hazard, you have sort of a step function that either you're below or above. And that's always really strange to see on a computer screen that sort of scenario develops in front of you.
And Alderaan, is the concern, given that you got sea level rise happening anyway and all that comes with that, I mean, would a tsunami pretty much of any size be highly destructive in the Humboldt Bay area?
Oh, I think so. Depending on the elevation of the tides, we have a water elevation change on an order of 6 to 8 feet on a daily basis. So if it hit during a high tide, it would probably remove all of the dikes around Humboldt Bay and inundate all of those former tide lands.
Wow. We have a phone call here, too, from Anna in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Alderaan Laird and Robert Weiss.
My question is for Alderaan. First of all, thank you for the terrific work you've done for the future of Humboldt County and your work around the bay. I know you've walked the entire bay and charted the entire bay. And I guess the side question is, can the public go somewhere and see that presentation that you've made with the map showing your charts?
Yes, the Humboldt County has a website for their local coastal program update, and they have a sea level rise tab there. If you just click on that, the PowerPoint presentation should be up and running, I believe, probably by the end of this week.
Anna, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. So back to Dr. Weiss with this research. And who else was involved with the research besides you at Virginia Tech?
There were two colleagues from the Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, Dr. Adam Switzer and Dr. Lyndon Lee. They're really the local experts on sea level change and tsunami hazard in the South China Sea. And there was also a colleague from the Taiwan University who studies the Manila Trench closely.
And so was it a case of what you had considered a worst-case scenario has now moved into the middle of the range of possibilities for Macau?
Yeah, because of the threshold situation in terms of when flooding occurs, depending on the earthquake magnitude, developed in a way that you generate significant flooding in Macau, that earthquake has lowered in magnitude significantly, that it's no longer the worst case. That's correct.
All right. So I mean, you said like an 8.6 or an 8.8 traditionally would have been enough to cause some flooding in Macau, but only that size. So what size are we talking about now, or what magnitude of earthquake would cause that kind of flooding now?
8.2, 8.0. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty low now.
All right, so different standards for sure. So, and I have not mentioned that you are also, in addition to your work as an associate professor, you're the director of the Disaster Resilience and Risk Management Graduate Education Program. So I assume you come at this from a risk management perspective. So what are the ways in which people can make use of the study and perhaps reduce some of their risks?
I would say the call is upon the lawmakers and policymakers, especially in that area, but also around the globe. What I've always found surprising is that the sea level rise that we thought was the worst case, like a meter or 50 centimeter by the mid-century, are now sort of values that are not surprising us anymore. You know, we have to assume much larger values of sea level rise as worst-case scenarios in the future. It seems to surprise us always. And from a disaster management perspective and risk management perspective and resilience, I think we need to stress that we have the tools, the scientific tools, to predict what might happen in the future, and then use this to inform our investments now that we make. If we don't make investments in that, then in 25 years or so, then the causeway, for example, in Humboldt Bay might be super expensive or too expensive to do it. But if we adopt a strategy that allows us to change in mitigation efforts with time into the future, and we plan for that, then it might be less expensive and less impactful. So we need to just make forward investments and allow us to make these investments. Under the current climate, political climate, it's very difficult due to election cycles and just the limited resources that are available for such projects. But they are important, and I think we can not only show they are important in terms of destructions, but we can back it up with economical measures and the impact events could have in the future if you don't do anything.
All right, so act now and spend some money, or spend a whole lot of money later on. It's a constant.
Yeah, that's essentially
right.
Yeah.
All right,
and we're talking about an order of magnitude, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, good job to tell us about the hazards here. Robert Weiss is an associate professor of natural hazards in the Department of Geosciences at Virginia Tech University, participated in the study of tsunami hazards with sea level rise, and Alderon Laird has been studying sea level rise in Humboldt Bay for many years. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much.